Welcome back, everybody, to the show. Thank you for being here.
May I give a disclaimer first?
There is a real positive thread that runs through this year, which is what is going on in Congress.
The question of whether you use the term morphing or some kind of reclassification or just reevaluation.
Or transition.
Transition. Exactly.
Sure, okay.
Exactly.
Transition.
Perfect.
Transition is a good one.
Nice.
Yeah, transition is a great one.
So DAO governance is a hot topic and has been for a while.
Does the Polkadot DAO have an organization that's liable for its decisions right now?
You have to have a certain amount of law to protect the coders.
Waving a giant red flag.
The launch team wishes you good luck and Godspeed.
Space monkeys blasting off on regulation, diversity of thought here at Polkadot Decoded. We have a lot of familiar faces on the show. Very, very lucky to have them all here. Josh Clayman from Linklaters, Angie Dalton from Signum Growth, and Chrissy Hill, General Counsel for Parity. Welcome back, everybody, to the show. Thank you for being here.
May I give a disclaimer first?
Actually, let's stop the presses here because this is obviously a very sensitive panel. We need to be careful what we say, so we're going to throw it to Josh for a disclaimer on everything to come. Josh, take it away.
Thank you. So nothing that we say is legal, investment, or tax advice, or really any other kind of advice, and these are our personal views only. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, so now I feel like we're ready to just speak our minds and talk freely.
I was really excited about the presentation. And you just said the word perspective, and that was a key word in the presentation, even though you weren't there.
Yeah.
It was about a perspective shift. And Dr. Wood started with a really, appropriate quote from Marcel Proust. So I'm a French nerd. I was a French major undergrad in college. And so I was very excited to hear Proust quoted regardless. But this quote, can I read it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so I'm going to read it. The only true voyage of discovery, the only fountain of eternal youth, would be not to visit strange lands, but possess others' eyes. To behold the universe through the eyes of another, of 100 others. To behold the 100 universes that each of them beholds, that each of them is. So I loved this idea before we started with a perspective shift. So in the spirit of community governance, Dr. Wood made a proposal. And his proposal started with the idea that we have all these slots for specific time frames, and there are specific use cases, and you know, the two-year leases and the auction mechanism that we have.
Yeah.
And we call them parachains. But could it be the case that this is not about chains, or parachains as we refer to them, but it's about space? And it's about this, these are not his words, these are mine, but kind of like a big pot of resources, of compute.
Right.
And we have this big pot of resources and compute that's available for applications. And so what I liked about this is that if you think about this big pot and you think about these parachains and remove the word parachain and insert the word core for parachain, these are cores for a ubiquitous computer. So a big platform. And this goes back to the original vision of Polkadot, which was so compelling to me. It is for people, for users, and not just a few people. It's for all people. And it needs to be resilient against other people or a set of people who might try to do something that was not intended. You know, we have all these slots for specific time frames that we call parachains. So let me just dig in one layer deeper and then we'll move on.
Sure, sure.
So if we think about this as block space or time, core time, it sounds a little bit more fungible than the way we think about it right now. So could it be the case that the slot auction model that we have right now isn't agile enough?
Yeah.
These are kind of artificial barriers to entry. And Dr. Wood said something about tinkering, which I thought was interesting. People don't come to Polkadot to tinker because it's the barrier to entry is pretty high.
Yeah.
And so what if we could just take what we already have and just adjust so that we could open it up to even more people to tinker? And then the other thing that it reminded me, because I have a very traditional technology background, so I'm going to dip into kind of Web 2 language here, but it reminded me a lot of AWS Compute or you know, Google Cloud or Microsoft mm-hmm. Azure, where you're renting cycles, you're renting compute cycles.
That's right, yeah.
So it was like that. But what it really is I think the original vision of Parathreads.
That's
Could
right.
this just be the original vision of Parathreads
mm-hmm.
rising to the top of the original white paper
yeah.
and kind of a recognition by the community that this could be the way forward to bring in more people?
I mean, one of the things I love about it, even though I wasn't there, as was noted, but I have heard from Angie and others and seen a little visual. One of the things I love always is that it's always presented as this is an idea. Right? And we welcome all ideas. And there's this competition of ideas just like new eyes and just like tinkering. You know, it all goes to this idea that there is no one right way. And I love this idea about how can we collectively think to continually improve the tech infrastructure here?
That's
I think
right.
that's one of the things, not with respect to this speech, although it sounds like it was in this as well, but with respect to other talks that I've heard given, where it's been made clear, look, don't look to a central person or a central group to show you the way. Like, that's not how we find the best ideas. We find the best ideas from sourcing them broadly, from using those new eyes. And the eyes of others.
Being in the room yesterday and looking at Gav's presentation, one of the things that really jumped out at me was the hand-drawn diagrams he had actually inserted into the presentation, I think within the hour of before him going on. And the first was how, you know, pictorially we represent the polka dot relay chain at the moment with like a wheel in the middle and the parachains around. But it's now visually being represented more as like a living organism, like a cell, right?
Right.
So looking again at where he was drawing in his head what it would look and feel like with this core model, with this block space model, with the original Parathread model, it really did feel like it's moving again to that living organism. It's breathing, it's moving on, it's taking in a lot of different inputs and has like more of a 3D feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like a real engagement. And in that room, which was so hot, I mean, it was sweltering here. It did feel like, you know, a cauldron of ideas coming together. And a lot of people came out, I think, trying to take it all in, trying to visualize it. But there was a real buzz.
Right. And speaking to that, from what I understand was said, it seems like he was describing a polka dot that has emerged through using polka dot, right? A lot of the language that he was using, we've been hearing from other builders and other users in the ecosystem.
Yeah.
This idea of slots, the barrier being too high, we discovered that by using polka dot together.
Yes.
And we discovered that, oh, there are people who are left out. There are people who can't join. And so it's not so much, it doesn't appear to me so much that he's like, here's the next version of polka dot, everybody get to work. But he is here describing where we are and where it can be.
Yes. And I think also one of the things he also started out with saying is you have this original vision, this original paper.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you're building, it might not actually come together like you think for whatever reason, but you can iterate. And that's part of why we're in this Web3 world. And, you know, we're still working. There will always be working to achieve that original vision.
I mean, I do think, like, if you look at the white paper, it does, in my view, I've always thought, okay, it's been delivered what was promised in the white paper, right? Which, of course, is important for a lot of reasons. But also this idea, like Chrissy's saying, of a living organism, the feedback, right? The continuous feedback from the use. I've always thought, if you believe in the vision of Polkadot, you believe in a multi-chain future, right? Because that's the whole, like, raison d'etre. And that is, I keep going back to the quote that Angie was saying, and I guess that Dr. Wood brought up, but this idea of these new eyes, right? And these new eyes looking at the familiar place and having ideas that bring it further ahead.
So what do we do when the regulator's eyes look at a system that's built on blockchain technology, but that's framing itself and operating as something more as software?
It depends on where you're looking, right?
Yeah.
With Mika,
yes.
I think there's certainty now in terms of at least the regulatory direction.
Uh-huh.
Then you see other jurisdictions around the world like Hong Kong, and Dubai. You have some things going on in Brazil. And I think, as Josh was saying, it does depend upon where you sit. And I think what regulators around the world are realizing is that although there may not be harmony in terms of approach, the certainty is definitely necessary in order to attract all this amazing pioneering innovation that really is the future. So putting something down is better than nothing. I'm based in London, despite my accent. I'm from Charleston, South Carolina, but have been in London for years. So I follow quite closely what's happening in the UK, especially post-Brexit, right?
Sure.
I mean, my children are British, and I would love to see the UK become like a fintech hub and, you know, really promoting innovation. And so the UK is looking more to put digital assets into the existing regulatory framework. Whereas in Europe, they've created a constellation, actually, of regulations to govern digital assets, AI, and, you know, these new technologies. And then in the U.S., I mean, I would say it is heavily enforcement-based. And actually, as Josh was saying earlier, and we were talking about earlier, moving more towards litigation and courts being involved. Where something is written down at the outset and you kind of know what you're getting, even if you might not agree with it, like for instance, in India, there's a 30% tax rate on crypto assets. Mm. I mean, sure, that's high, but that's the price of entry. So at least you know it, and it's not going to be a surprise. So again, it goes back to that certainty being absolutely key to really foster this innovation.
I think in the US, you know, we often say that there's a principles-based approach, right, which means facts and circumstances, and there isn't always new legislation that's introduced or adopted for every new kind of technology. And that's seen by many regulators and some in the US, like as a strength of some of the laws, right? Because you don't have to keep reinventing them every time you have a new technology and then have the laws become obsolete. I think what we're seeing, though, and again, this is against the backdrop of a lot of regulatory competition, not only among federal regulators, but also at the state level. I mean, everyone's weighing in, and the jurisdiction, at least, is argued to be very overlapping. And you mentioned Congress, right, and congressional hearings. I think the market infrastructure bill that's been introduced, for example, by McHenry and others, that is a discussion draft right now, I think things like this are really helpful potentially in moving things forward. And what I mean by that, to echo Chrissy, it's great when you know an answer, right? And so even though a principles-based approach may be good in some ways, knowing the answers, for example, to when you have sufficient decentralization, right? When do you reach that point?
Yeah.
That's not something that I think people are very comfortable with relying upon, okay, facts and circumstances. Like, people want to have some kind of sense of when they've achieved it. And so I think that's one thing that the discussion draft right now is proposing. And I think it's consistent with some of the approaches that have been taken, including, as we all know, you know, about when you want to come forward and say, like, look, we've reached the point where we're, you know, we're sufficiently decentralized for purposes of securities laws.
I think one thing that Josh and I talk about a lot is this idea that there's been a shift in, kind of focus around regulation in the U.S., which is from, you know, scams, frauds, ICOs, enforcement actions, to what's going on in Congress and this draft bill. And actually, we're pretty excited. We were putting together the presentation, you know, for later and thinking about the U.S. regulatory backdrop. There is a real positive thread that runs through this year, which is what is going on in Congress. Because I think that, you know, and it's funny because when we laid it all out on a timeline, it was bookended by the introduction of this draft bill and the news last week that they will come to a decision in July. Now, of course, there are all sorts of, you know, puts and takes, and it's Republican-led, and it needs all, you know, there are a lot of criticisms that it's not going to go through, but it has expanded the mentality of people to embrace this idea, or I guess come to the realization that the SEC is a regulator. That's all they do is enforce the law. Their job is to enforce the existing laws. Now, if the existing laws aren't working, we need to go to Congress because we need to change those laws.
Sure.
So It's always kind of been confusing to me when people say it's regulation by enforcement, because that's exactly what they do, is enforce laws. That's all they do.
Okay.
You know, there is this idea, of course, of regulators enforce, right? Regulators can also make rules in certain instances.
Yeah.
And I think what we're seeing just in the evolution is that while before it used to be that a regulator would speak and everyone would be like, oh, right? Now I think, and you know, others have said this probably far better than I have, about enforcement exhaustion and things like that. I think
sure.
Now people have come to the realization that, you know what, some of this stuff, it's going to be decided by the courts. Right. And that
we've
yes.
reached an impasse.
Yes.
We've yeah. gotten to the point where we've exhausted all of the rules. And at the end, we still don't have something solid enough as a law to depend on.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think people have also realized that, you know, if the chairman of the SEC is giving a speech, OK, that's a view. And we
yeah.
will see what happens in court. And I think we're seeing that play out. And I do think also, you know, aside from making clear what the actual state of the law is, which is part of the job of courts, right, in the U.S., of course, making new law, right? And that's something that always is a possibility and always is there. I do think, I mean, one thing as we think about the future of the space, and this goes back to the new eyes and the multi-chain future, is just I think that having a mindset of building regulatory bridges and not regulatory moats, I think that's something that would be helpful, just in general.
I mean, just to go back to the presentation yesterday and the concept of accords, that was a key concept, and that those are, you could describe those as opt-in treaties on Polkadot. And this is something that really resonated with me, because as somebody who spends a lot of time thinking about regulation
yeah.
and the differences between all these different jurisdictions and between these different, you know, the regulators, the courts, and then, of course, obviously between countries, in Polkadot, accords could actually rise above this incredible technology platform. And I think the words that were used were allow for patterns of cooperation that transcend chains over multiple chains mm-hmm. and over multiple technology architectures. Wouldn't that be great if we had that in law?
And it brought to mind that concept of network nation, which is something that people talk about a lot. And I think, you know, that's a whole separate discussion in and of itself. But it does, you know, make you think about what a future could look like, which does involve those treaties, those accords, and those that cooperation across a number of different chains. So,
all right, fascinating. What are some elements of MiCA that provide clarity that we're maybe looking for in other parts of the world that really allow people to go forward and build?
Actually, on the panel yesterday about regulation, there was a member of parliament who was speaking.
Yeah.
And he was very proud and right to point out that the EU is taking a new approach. If you are a startup, you write your white paper and then you submit it. And it is actually the onus is then on the regulator to come back to you
Wow.
to say why you are not complying with the law, rather than the startup having to prove from the outset that they are complying with the law. And that is a real fundamental shift in perspectives and obligations. And I think going back again to that tinkerer and the barriers to entry, those concepts, it really does just wipe that away.
Sure.
The flip side is, I'd like to see the state of that regulatory team,
right?
How big that team needs to be. And of course, that would be public funding necessary to, you know, support that. So there's things to work out. But I think that fundamental shift in perspective is fascinating, actually.
It's really interesting to see that European influence into the McHenry-Thompson bill as well.
Yes.
Because, you know, Daniel Schoenberger spoke to in front of, you know, Congress. And that was something that I think was pretty important in terms of commentary,
yep.
is that there be a 30-day period in which the regulator can come back to a project and say yes or no.
Okay.
And I think just building like slightly on what you're saying is, and when you're saying the regulator can come back, that's going back to that idea of you present to the regulator, okay, we're decentralized, for purposes of, the Howey test or whatever test may exist at the time, we are sufficiently decentralized. And that's where they're getting exactly what Angie's saying, where they're, at least it's proposed in this discussion draft that they would have this 30-day window where the regulator would, the onus would be on the regulator.
So this concept of morphing and decentralizing away from a security is part of this draft?
Yes, yeah? In many ways. Okay. I don't know necessarily that folks would want to refer specifically to morphing.
Okay.
I think there is, just as in certain areas, people are hesitant to use the word NFT, right? They might want to say digital collectible instead or something like that. I do think the question of whether you use the term morphing or some kind of reclassification or just reevaluation
or transition.
Transition, exactly.
Sure, okay.
Exactly,
transition,
perfect.
Transition is a good one.
Yeah, nice. Transition is a great one. Yeah, because I think the idea, at least as I understand it from the current discussion draft, is that initially when you have a small group of people who are fundraising, that something may look one particular way.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as time progresses and as development progresses and as things shift, and again, all of this is case by case, right? There is no monolithic way to have a blockchain or an ecosystem. But then at a certain point, when we're talking about a whole new way of thinking about the internet, about connectivity, about all kinds of things and the features of digital assets and the technology that are going to allow us to continually move forward, right? And so this recognition that at a certain point, you've got, as Chrissy said, you've got a living organism. You've got a machine that works itself, And I think that's part of what's in the bill, at least the
discussion draft. So interesting. I use morphing, and again, that hearing, it's all just perspectives and points of view, but I was surprised to hear a couple congressmen use the word morphing in that as well. So, but maybe there's another way to speak about it as well, of course.
I mean, I'm not against using the term morphing.
Sure, sure.
You should explain where it comes from.
Yeah, the term morphing, I believe, first came from the Hyndman speech in 2018.
Right.
Right.
When he was talking specifically about Ethereum, mm-hmm. right? And whether present day, in his view, offers and sales of Ether were likely to be sales of securities. And in his view, they weren't. And actually, it's interesting because the Hyndman speeches have come to the fore more recently in certain ongoing litigation, just as a reminder. And so I do think that was where that term came from, this idea of having a metaphysical kind of morphing. As we move forward, I think there are people who maybe would like a new term, because with a new term, a new concept with some parameters around it, that make it a little less, mysterious.
It was a bit of a strange word when it first hit the scene. As far as our audience goes, it was a bit confusing.
When you have a few people who control technology and make all the decisions and own most of it, it has to transition and decentralize, and power needs to be given up, and more people need to get involved, and that's a transition process.
Right.
I think it's a process, again, that is not really going to end ever, right? Because there's always more ways you can diffuse that power. And that's, again, part of the underlying philosophy. And I think recently, just in the last 10 days, OpenGov has come, was tested on Kusama, and now it's on Polkadot. And, much more of a all token holders voting in a way that under the previous governance system maybe didn't happen in the same way that it can under OpenGov.
That's right.
For a variety of reasons. I think all token holders are starting to come to grips with what that means, proposal reviews, how they can vote, when they should vote, what's the process. There's a lot of education that's ongoing, but the central core idea is that everyone should be voting, should be involved, and we want to make it easier and more accessible for the entire community. And so that second generation of governance, again, plays into this transition. And it can be gradual, it can be fast, but it's always moving to diffusion of power.
And is there any legislation in the UK or the EU about participating in DAOs, about being responsible for the choices of a DAO based on voting with tokens?
So DAO governance is a hot topic and has been for a while.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing, and again, lots of jurisdictions around the world, different approaches being taken. There's a number of examples in the States. You also have, the Swiss will say they were first. You know, there is still a concept that code should be law, right? And that is something that many members of the community feel quite strongly about. But legal entities still need to be in place for a variety of reasons. And that might be more akin to rule of law, right? So you need to have some of these rule of law-based entities, approaches in our current Web3 world,
yeah,
right? And DAO governance is one of those areas where we're mixing concepts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this concept of a DAO, where there's a community, they want to be able to do all kinds of things with their DOT, for instance, or their tokens. It could be governance. The list goes on and on. But if you have a traditional business, which, let's be honest, most of the world are really, they don't know a lot about Web3, and they don't know a lot about DAOs. And the DAO wants to, say, rent a space like this,
yeah,
for a big event. Well, a traditional business is not going to want to enter into a contract to rent this space with a community that has no legal form or substance, where they can't send their invoice to, because,
yeah,
there's no address.
Right.
Right? So part of DAO governance and the discussion and a lot of the debate is putting in place something that represents the community that traditional businesses can interact with, but is still true to some of these fundamental Web3 concepts and community concepts.
Hmm.
We're still trying to get it right. We're in a bridging period.
Right.
So I always say internally, yes, some people may believe that we're moving to a world where code is law, right? But we're not there. And we need to still focus on traditional ways of doing business and at the same time educate, right? And bring people on board with this Web3 vision of the world and what a DAO means, how a community can act, why we are wanting to form a collective in the way that we do. But, you know, we're like 1% of the world. And
yeah,
we have a lot of educating to do.
Of course.
Right? And we need to take people's hands and bring them with us. And then maybe in a few years, some place like this that rents an event space might be okay to engage directly with a community. They may not want to see a legal entity.
Does the Polkadot DAO have an organization that's liable for its decisions right now?
No.
No. Interesting. Okay.
But it is under discussion.
All right. Fascinating.
From the U.S. perspective, I think the way Chrissy framed it is terrific. Like, there's the concept and the vision of decentralization and why this may be an ethos, right? Like a something important to people, you know, this idea of coming together and having the best ideas win, right? And move ahead incrementally. I think for regulators, speaking only for the U.S. and not speaking on behalf of any regulators, clearly, all caveats apply. You know, there is this concept of, okay, well, if something bad happens, who is responsible? And I think with respect to the U.S. securities laws, certainly there's been a lot of discussion with respect to how decentralization relates specifically to the Howey test and the efforts of others and whether there's an active participant.
Yeah.
But with other areas of law, regulators have tried to make clear that, you know what, if you're trying to decentralize because you don't want to have certain responsibilities under the law, it might not matter for certain areas of the law. So Treasury came out with a report earlier this year where they basically, it was actually a very in-depth report, lots of questions, you know, very thoughtful report, I think, in many ways. But it basically also said, you know, for purposes of sanctions and obligations under the Bank Secrecy Act, like KYC, AML, things like that, decentralization, not relevant. And so I think that's something where there's this tension between regulators trying to hold someone liable and trying to figure out who that someone is, because there's a visceral reaction I think, at least we've seen, when regulators try to hold individual developers liable, right? And then you get into First Amendment and all kinds of other arguments as well. But there's something that people, you know, will, and we've seen it, like with Ether Delta, right? And Zachary Coburn being held liable for that. Or if you think of the sanctions against Tornado Cash and all the resistance to sanctioning a smart contract, and yet a developer is in, I believe, still in jail in another country.
Under house arrest now.
Okay, under house, thank you. And so I think, as Chrissy was noting about some of the developments in the U.S., we've seen, I think, in addition to some legislation, right, that's potentially not just the existing legislation for a DAO wrapper, say, in Wyoming, but newer legislation as well in other states that kind of builds off of the cases I'm about to just mention briefly to try and, in my view, try and insulate members from liability and give some kind of legal form to a DAO that could have limited liability. But the two cases that come to mind, and I'm sure there's others, one relates to UkiDAO, and that was a CFTC enforcement action where they recently had a default judgment. That was very controversial in many ways because they tried to say, okay, look, we're going to make a determination of who is responsible for this, and so we're going to look at people who actually exercised governance, right? And that is, that was the subject of a lot of pushback, right? Because, of course, there's always the questions, well, what if you exercise governance, but you said, let's not do this, or let's get a lawyer, or something like that. And so that's one aspect. And then there's a case from Northern California, the District Court of Northern California, that related to the predecessor DAO, BZX DAO, I believe, which is the predecessor to UkiDAO, where someone tried to argue, look, okay, this is essentially functioning like a general partnership, and there is a negligence claim that was brought, and at least in the filings that I had seen, the court appeared to be saying, yes, you know, guess what? There is this statute in California, and guess what? We see there is a duty. We see, you know, you're at least articulating, alleging a breach. We see foreseeability or causation. At least it's been properly alleged. Remember, this is like early stage in litigation. And then, you know, of course, damages. And so I think the tension between trying to hold someone liable, trying to figure out who that someone should be, reconciling that with existing laws. And I think one of the criticisms with Tornado Cash, of course, was people were saying, among other things, there's no person, there's no entity, there's no property here. This is a smart contract. And by the way, there are many non-nefarious reasons for which someone might be inclined to use Tornado Cash. So, yeah, I think it's this push-pull, and we need to figure out, all of us, regulators, community, everything, about where exactly, for things like anti-terrorism, anti-terrorist financing, anti-money laundering, sanctions, who's going to do this? Because that's kind of, I don't want to speak for everyone in the world, but in my personal view, probably don't want to be financing terrorism. Right?
What the gentleman from Parliament said yesterday that resonated with me was you have to have a certain amount of law to protect the coders. Right? And so I think what you're talking about, Chrissy, and also what you're mentioning, Josh, is so important because there's always going to be an overlap. There's always going to be a Venn diagram between code is law and law is law, right?
Rule of law.
So I feel like there's and a certain amount of that does protect the coders. We don't want to see developers tracked down in Holland and thrown in jail.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And this protection goes, so speaking from my seat, General Counsel of Parity, where a lot of the devs are.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at our insurance policy. Right? How are our devs protected by our insurance policy for errors or omission, right? We talk a lot about intent. We talk a lot about reasonableness because, again, I mean, I think there is a feeling with UkiDAO that it was set up to circumvent some of the rules. And like you said, Tornado Cash, there are reasons that are not nefarious that you would use that technology. So, again, looking at intent, looking at a common standard of reasonableness, which always comes up in discussions, and trying to carve out something that's workable.
Yeah.
To, again, be consistent with what we're trying to build is actually why we are here.
I should say I wasn't speaking about that particular developer because I don't know all the ins and outs of it. It's just the general concept.
Yes.
And you're talking about like why we're all here and kind of the bigger picture of getting to where we all want to go is going to involve a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Right.
And I love that idea of the Venn diagram. And it's talking about it in a constructive way, which I think that dialogue, I feel like it is a little bit missing. Yeah. Especially from a dev's perspective. I think it's something that needs to come out a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's important to take a long-term perspective, I think, as a builder, always, because of the impact, you know, the ripple effect in water. It doesn't stop there. It ripples. Yeah. And that's one thing that excites me about Polkadot, is that the base of what it is so robust. And resilient was another word, you know, that came out. And I think that that's, it's an exciting space to be for a developer because a lot of the future-proofing has been baked into the technology, but it also requires a mentality among developers to understand that they're not on an island, I think.
And both of you guys brought up before we got on here, you know, this idea of, you know, this diversity of thought and these other voices and the dissents that have been, you know, we see them with regulators in the U.S. and elsewhere, you know, and how important those dissenting voices are, you know, and that we have dissenting voices. I think that competition of ideas is important not just for the technology, right, but for the development of law. And to the extent that we can bring more people into the fold and have more informed, educated voices and thoughts, I think we end up with a better state in terms of not just the technology, but the legal approach, which, like the technology, I mean, it should be evolving.
And I think challenge is a muscle you have to exercise. It can be difficult, especially when you're part of a community that has such a clear vision and you're marching towards that vision. And to have someone say, look at it differently, or you have a different way of doing things. It does take a minute to say, okay, let me take this in.
Yeah.
Let me try to put myself in these other shoes, see things with a different eye. It can be tiring, but it's just essential.
And in the end, I mean, the builders are building, and we should be listening.
Yes.
Because we can hear signals if we listen to all of them.
Right. This has been a very interesting conversation. I want to just take it to litigation before we end here, because this is really the hot drama, I guess, around the whole issue. In the States, we've had a lot of litigation lately. Earlier, I said, you know, morphing kind of seemed like a made-up term, but it really wasn't. Obviously, we know there's been a lot of work directly with the SEC. And then in these, when the SEC was suing Coinbase and Binance, they listed a whole bunch of securities, and DOT was not on the list there. I don't know if we want to speak to that at all, but it was absent from the list.
So back in 2019, when it was around the time actually that EOS Block One was given the fine of $24 million.
Okay.
I remember the numbers very clearly because it was $24 million, and the cacophony on Twitter was, okay, that was, I think it was 60 basis points of the total ICO. They raised something like $4 billion, you know? So 60 basis points, $4 billion, that's a parking ticket. So everybody should just go out and do whatever they want, ignore the law. And again, I felt like the founders of Polkadot looked at it differently and thought, we're here to build the future version of the internet. And that's going to be really hard and very complicated. Let's just see if we can abide by the existing laws and build the future of the internet.
That's right, yeah.
And so it was as simple as that, to be honest, and it really resonated with me because having had a 20-year history in traditional securities and knowing, you know, that we could go in and speak to the SEC, and, you know, Josh and I, you know, kind of felt, let's just do this. I mean, it's going to take, you know, a lot of steps and, you know, 50-plus meetings or whatever it was. But it was an iterative process, and we felt that it was doable.
Yeah.
And from a Polkadot perspective, it shouldn't be really even a focus. Yeah. Because Bolgara, I mean, the builders are here to build technology. We're just supporting actors here, just trying to make sure that we do everything in a way that makes this future-proof.
Yeah, it wasn't part of the story at all.
It wasn't part of the story.
Yeah, the beginning of this year, I guess.
So, yeah.
I mean, I think it's important to remember, of course, that with the litigations that have been ongoing, these are allegations at this point.
Yeah.
It hasn't been determined by a court, and allegations haven't even been made against the individual tokens, right? So I just think that's critical to remember. I also would just caution,
that's a good point.
You know, there but for the grace of God go we, and in the spirit of building regulatory bridges and not moats, I think it's important to remember that, like, part of the reason for which our experience with FinHub at the SEC was made public was also to show, you know, maybe this is one of the ways forward.
Yeah.
Right? Of course, another way forward is litigation. Another way forward is new laws. This was just one of the various eyes on the existing landscape.
Yeah.
And so I think I would just caution us from trying to read too much into complaints, especially when the story hasn't been written for anyone.
Mm-hmm. I just want to interject to just say, I just joined 18 months ago, and Angie and Josh have been around for much longer than that, setting this journey that we're on from a regulatory perspective. And there have been many people who have been involved. But, you know, part of the reason why I, with my traditional background, felt comfortable joining this community and this Polkadot community is because of visionaries such as the two of you, right? And, you know, it's a privilege to work with you and to see the careful thought that has gone into this road that we're on and this route that we're on. And I felt comfortable with that. And I felt like that was what would lead the community to longevity, right? To being able to fulfill that vision. And I know that there are other paths, but this is the path that I want to be affiliated with, the community I want to be affiliated with, and with thought leaders such as yourselves, setting that and that journey for us and making sure that, yes, you do say, you know, but for the grace of God go we, but there's a lot of hard work that has also gone into that, a lot of thought, a lot of hours, a lot of, like, blood, sweat, and tears, which y'all and others have done on behalf of all of us. And so I just want to thank you for that, because I feel in the best place possible when we're kind of standing on jello.
Right.
Well, we
feel the same way about you, Chrissy. So.
I know. And also, the title of the presentation that we're all going to be doing later is The Treacherous Road to Innovation. Uh-huh. We had the road to innovation originally, the U.S. regulatory backdrop in crypto, but then we added treacherous in parentheses because it's a new road.
It's kind of like still building it as we go.
It's like Costa Rica right 20 years ago. It's a new road. And now it's all smooth, you know, but
Well, I'll say, since we've had all of you on our show and introduced to our audience, you've inspired a lot of our audience members to be paying attention to this space. And, you know, they see complaints like this, and now a lot of the audience believe they are lawyers as well. So we have a lot of lively debates on Twitter about what this all means.
Yep.
Looking to the future, the next 6 months, let's say, what are some legislation or some rulings that we should be paying attention to? What are you interested in that maybe we should be looking at too?
So one of the things we're going to talk about in our talk later today, there's a visual that we start the presentation with and that we end the presentation with. And it's a red flag in front of, like, an old-fashioned vehicle, like, kind of like a car, but like a vehicle.
Yeah. Right?
And the reason, I'd love to say that this is something that sparked in my mind independently, but actually a friend, Guy Silva, who was on stage with me a few weeks ago, brought up this idea, and I just loved it. And those who are familiar with this past very old legislation will be like, I don't know, maybe, like, there are aspects of it that might not fit. But I think if you think about it conceptually, to me, it resonates and it gives a really positive outlook for the future to me, which is back when vehicles independent vehicles, not on rails, right? So the predecessor cars, you know, when they were introduced, you know, there was this new technology, and it was powerful potentially. It was just in the beginnings, and everyone saw it as very, very dangerous, right? People had rails, and they had horses and carriages, but what was this thing? And so legislation was introduced in various areas of the world that basically said, like, okay, well, if you're going to operate this thing, you need this many drivers, you need someone who can, I'm paraphrasing here, but, like, somebody who can do the gas, you know, these have to be with you, and by the way, like, various other requirements, and you need someone running in front of you waving a giant red flag in front of you as you're driving,
yeah,
because you have to warn all of the horses and carriages that this very, very dangerous machinery is coming.
Yeah.
And so, like, and that's actually where we get the term red flags, right? And in some, I think, like, some U.S. equivalent had, like, and you must have a red light at night or something like that doing this waving.
Yeah.
So, of course, as you can imagine, the vehicle had to go really slowly if you're following behind a running person. So it couldn't do all the amazing things that, you know, cars can do,
yeah,
right? And so at first there was this very restrictive legislation that was very, because it came from a place of fear. It came from a place of looking at the risks and not looking at the benefits for society and not really understanding them. And then as we have come along, of course, people realized, oh, wait, we could have stop signs. We could have stop lights. We could have seat belts. Right? All these sorts of things. Maybe we don't need somebody running around with a red flag. And maybe then the cars can go faster and look at all the things that we have and how it's just ubiquitous. It's part of our lives. It's hard to imagine a world without our own independent vehicles. And so I think I use this stealing from Guy, right, as an idea to say, like, look, this is where we are right now on this treacherous road. We're still at the point where we're trying to figure out which color flag is going to be waved in front of us as we run along. But eventually, I mean, this technology, these developments are inevitable, and they're so expansive. Like, I think I used the term, like, starburst before, where it's expanding in all these directions. And at some point, we're going to get to the point where we're like, wait, no, this is just how it is. And we're going to find ways, just like we have our seatbelts, to strap in.
Yeah.
And we'll have stop signs and things along the road that allow us to go faster and allow us to take for granted and build upon this infrastructure, this new infrastructure, and these new capabilities. So that was a little long-winded of me.
No,
but
that's amazing, because I was going to say something similar, which is that I feel that we're at, when you said the next, did you say next 6 months?
Yeah.
I was thinking we're at point zero in this evolution. And, you know, just to the, we're at the very beginning of the laws even being kind of amended. And so I'm really excited about what's going on in Congress with the McHenry-Thompson bill, of course. But that's literally, like, the very first step. It's and I'm excited about that, but it's going to take a long time for this to evolve.
Of course, yeah.
And we're going to see a lot of tweaks along the way that are going to allow us to drive Teslas one day.
Beautiful.
Actually, you can. I think there are Teslas powered by Polkadot. I saw that on the
peak Teslas.
Teslas.
Totally.
Yeah. I think it is inevitable what we're talking about, and I think from the legislative side of things, I feel like there needs to be some recognition that, particularly with Gen Z and Gen Alpha, they're already used to thinking about the world this way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially, I have a 12-year-old and 7-year-old, right? They're lockdown kids. They spent like 2 years playing Roblox, you know, gaming. I
spent 2 years playing
Roblox. Yeah, exactly. Me too. And I think this generation, the younger generations, are just going to assume these things are going to be in place and kind of look at us and go, what's your problem, right?
Yeah,
And so we need to be building for the future, and we need to be building for that mindset, because as a Gen Xer in this world, I do sometimes lament at the lack of, again, vision and recognition that this is inevitable, and we need to position things now so particularly different places around the world can foster that innovation and foster that mindset. So I really want to see that type of focus, which is what makes me be excited about being in the UK.
Yeah.
Because they really are focusing on being an innovation hub.
Right.
And I do hope that the legislation that comes in the UK is reflective of that. And I do think if you look around the world, there are other jurisdictions that are doing it a little bit better and a little bit faster. So I'm constantly watching to see what's happening, and literally this week, right? We do a regulatory rewind for parity.
Right.
30 minutes every week on a Thursday, and we look around the world to see what's happened. And, you know, I thought it was only going to be the legal team joining in. We get between 50 to 70 people dialing in. Angie was on not that long ago, asking questions about what's happening and, you know, what is the global approach.
Sure.
So I think just being mindful of the inevitability, trying to focus on who is fostering innovation the most, and then positioning yourselves accordingly, and then also giving feedback where you think there may be others that are lagging behind.
Yeah.
I think that's the dialogue that should be happening. And I think it is, but I think we could do more.
Well, I want to thank each and every one of you for bringing the dialogue to this show once again. I love each and every one of you for everything you're doing for the ecosystem. Thank you for shepherding us to a sustainable future with Polkadot. We're really grateful for all the work you do. And thank you very much for being on the show once again.
Jay, we are so thankful for you.
Seriously.
Because you do the most phenomenal podcast, and you have this incredible gift of distilling so many things into, you know, into information that we can use and understand and help us kind of navigate this path. You're just such a light for the whole community.
And another thing, since we're at it, you don't seem to have an agenda with what you're asking. You know, it's just really like observing. I mean, we're here at Polkadot Decoded, so it's like decoding whatever we're saying,
yeah,
whatever.
Basically,
that, as opposed to trying to push a narrative.
We're going to keep going back to Proust here.
That's right. That's right, yeah. And we're trying to understand the future through everybody's eyes together.
Yeah.
And make sure the future happens.
And I think also because what we're talking about is not binary.
That's right.
Right. And I think that can cause a lot of confusion and also fear within the community, rightly so.
Because people want the answer.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And I understand, and absolutely. And it's always, people are like, oh, lawyers, you always say it depends or maybe.
Yeah.
And we are in that world, but what we're trying to do is bring clarity and be those people who can say, let's talk about it. Let's engage in conversation. Let's try to educate, but also learn from others and get to a point, again, that supports the community, lifts it up, and makes it resilient. So thank you for giving us that platform and opportunity.